our listeners, as someone who eats lots of bread, I definitely would have perished in the first day of the apocalypse that we're about to talk about. That's right, we're returning to the Last of Us universe, and this time we're talking about episode 3 of the HBO show. There are mentions of suicide, so proceed with caution, but it doesn't get too intense. Thanks for listening!
Okay. So,
okay, this seems totally, like everything is good.
Totally natural. So, it's been 2 weeks, Val.
It has.
We can't act. What are we doing?
No. We're not going to
oh god.
Attempt to make amazing jokes that we've made 2 seconds ago, but remake them for the recording.
Yes.
Come on. Insanity.
I know.
We only do live comedy.
Yes. Here. This is improv night. This is like. Have you heard about that Seinfeld AI?
No. I don't follow AI stuff.
I'm obsessed with it. So there's this Twitch channel where you just like, they've got like this like Nintendo graphics Seinfeld setup. And then the AI generates the dialogue that the AI Seinfeld characters read. And they're like, it's supposed to be Seinfeld. And sometimes they like really nail it. And it's, I literally have laughed to the point of crying from this stupid AI Seinfeld stream.
I have never watched an episode of Seinfeld.
You're a baby. I used to grow up watching it with my parents. I don't know. It was just like something we did. You watch Seinfeld, like Friends or Survivor when that was big. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I'm dating myself.
Those I watched. Here. I watched Millionaire and Survivor.
But, like, the first season of them.
I don't know. Maybe. I watched Fear Factor.
I don't think you were born when the first season of Survivor was
maybe
on.
I was.
No, I think you
maybe
were.
Maybe I'm lying about my age.
I'm being hard on you. Okay. So
I was a sophisticated four-year-old.
Yes. Val came out of the womb speaking in full sentences and also talking about how the end of the world was in 27 years.
And I finished a lot of sandwiches for people, too.
Yeah. And that's how the end of the world was averted, giving her lots of sandwiches.
You're welcome.
So speaking of the end of the world, maybe I should do the introduction. Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
I'm Val.
And today we'll be discussing the third episode of the TV series The Last of Us, which just started up this year in January. I'm trying to think what I want to say here. I have not played the game. We've had an episode where we discussed the game and we talked about Bill on that episode. And you presented it. I went and listened to how you talked about Bill's story because I don't remember. But you presented it as kind of a sad moment.
It's very sad. He's a mean, really, really mean guy, honestly.
Yes.
He's just not a great person. He's, like, paranoid. He is cautious. He pushes everyone around him away. He doesn't like anyone. And, like, Frank was his companion and partner, and they didn't like each other that much.
Right. So in the game, Bill drove Frank away.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank got infected and committed suicide rather than become infected.
Yes.
Or, like, become a zombie cordyceps monster.
Yes. So here's the picture we have of them in the game, is that Frank would rather go out there from Bill's fairly safe town and risk death in a million different ways, and which does happen immediately.
Yeah. Whereas in the show, we're presented with a very happy couple. Bill and Frank are, I don't know, So to give a very brief plot summary, but if you haven't watched the episode, watch the episode because it's really good. Bill is a survivalist and he basically remains in the town when everyone else leaves to go to the government camps, which are maybe also just them murdering people. But Bill stays in the town. He builds his own little like survivalist paradise. And one day Frank shows up and Frank charms Bill I think that's what I would call it. He charms him.
Yeah.
And Bill takes him in and they begin a romance and they like have this fairy tale. Like, we've got this whole town to ourselves and we've made it all nice and we eat all this great food and, you know, just strawberries and hot showers and all this stuff that everyone else out there probably doesn't have much. And they have like a good life together. And then the episode kind of ends with Frank is terminally ill. It's not said what he has, but I don't know, something that's neurodegenerative, because you can see from his paintings, like the decline in his ability to do art. It usually speaks to a neurodegenerative disease, I think. And they decide to have one last good day together. And then they drink wine that has a bunch of painkillers in it and then go to bed together. And so it's a very moving, beautiful love story that I think is very different from what's in the game. So I'm going to start with this question for you, Val, putting you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like this version of Bill and Frank better than the game version?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I think it kind of is a little bit more true to the game in a sense. And this is going to be a very polarizing opinion, I feel like. But
yes.
To me, when I finished the game, it finished in hope, despite a lot of people seeing it as, like, the worst ending in the world, and, like, how could Joel behave in the way that he did at the end? And, like, it's such a 50-50, like, what side of the fence you fall on when you finish the game. But to me, it was an exceptionally hopeful ending. And this episode is a very hopeful episode. And, okay, did you watch all three episodes?
Yes.
The previous episode with Tess, that episode was so sad.
It was really sad.
It was really sad, but we saw Tess's hope grow. And I feel like as I played that game, that's what I experienced as Joel. Because we play as Joel in the first game, right?
Right.
And he starts off as a person who loses his daughter.
Yeah.
The show actually had almost an identical sequence. When they drive away from their town into the city.
Yeah.
Or like the bigger town, whatever it is. All of that is almost exactly the same. The only difference is like how they crashed.
Yeah.
But like you experience that twice if you played the game.
It's awful. You're talking about the pre-apocalypse
sequence? When Sarah dies.
Because that's the part that I've played, and
yes.
They got the tension completely correct, and I noticed that they kind of shot it like you were in the video game, was the fascinating
thing. Exactly, because in the game we play as Sarah in that section, and all we can do is sit in the back and like look around. That's the mechanic of the introduction before we play as Joel.
Also, I liked all the little hints that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Like the girl in the class who was like kind of like swaying rhythmically, which I guess is a sign of infection. And there was all these other little things that were just like, I don't know. I loved the intro. The first episode was so good.
Because I really liked that they changed how the fungus works in this show.
Oh, so it's changed. How did it change?
In the game, it's all about spores.
Okay.
And here, actually, I don't know if you've seen, but after the end of the second episode, they have a little, like, after behind the scenes segment.
I didn't.
In it, they talked about how it was really hard to incorporate spores in a live TV show.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's too much of a suspension of belief.
Okay.
Because literally, there are spores everywhere now.
Yeah.
Right? There's no escaping them. There's no protection. So they changed it so that it works more of like a network.
That was the whole thing with the like ground. Like they can like sense each other.
Yeah. Okay. And they don't have that in the game at all.
That's not in the game. Oh, nope. I assume that would be. I thought that was like something where like, if you weren't sneaky enough, they would call more of them. And that's like how the game implements its stealth mechanics.
No, no.
Okay.
Which is, I'm really enjoying it because it's new enough that I am reliving this experience with such fresh eyes and excitement.
Yeah.
But we have, just to get back to my point that I've been making for like 10 minutes now. We start the show with the worst thing that can happen to Joel.
Yep.
Right? And two episodes so far were about this fatalistic hope. And that's how I felt playing the first game. The second game is different. But the first game, that's how I felt. Because as you go through the world and you explore, you see all of these little echoes of civilization and like hints at other survivor groups that lived and flourished. And we don't know what happened to them. And in most cases, they probably all died and like got overrun or taken out by raiders, whatever it is. So it's awful, but at the same time, we get glimpses of humanity, and this show does it really well. Like, we had a kid die, I think, in every episode so far, right? In the first one, there were two, Sarah and that child in the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, I guess not in the second one, but in the third one, we have an infant that is clearly been killed by soldiers for no reason, because soldiers are committing war crimes, basically, at that point. They're just eliminating and exterminating humans.
Yeah, because it's one less person who can be infected, I guess, is the logic.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't like violence, and watching that makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But not in a way that makes me not want to watch the show. And I think it's because of that, like, hint of hope that they put in every single character around Joel.
So, I mean, yeah. I agree. I don't know enough to comment, like, on the game versus the show. But the reason why I, like, messaged you and was like, we need to talk about this episode is because we, over the past few weeks, have been focusing on the barrier gaze or dead lesbians trope. And to me, it is interesting because this episode, episode three, ends with Bill and Frank both dead. And yet it doesn't feel like barrier gaze to me, even though they both die. And I was thinking about, like, why is that? Why does this episode feel okay in a way that, I don't know, Clexa or any of those other things we talk about doesn't? And I think, to me,
did you figure it out, friend?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you my theory and then you tell me if you agree or disagree.
Yeah.
So the first thing is we see them, they get their happy ending in a way. Like, they get like 15 years together of like beautiful, peaceful, you know, loving, just being together, growing old together, getting that. And that's in spite of everything. Like, they're in a world where it is very likely that they could just die horribly on a random day. And that doesn't happen to them. They get to live a long, full life. And it's only when they get to this point where Frank is so terminally ill and his condition is, you know, getting worse. And they get to fulfill their relationship. They get married. They get to have one perfect day together. And keep in mind, someone pointed out that due to the timeline of, you know, when the events happen in this game, same-sex marriage didn't exist in the United States in 2003.
Actually, the game was 2013, I believe.
I mean, in the show.
Okay, okay.
But the show starts in 2003 with the pandemic. Yeah. And so same-sex marriage isn't a thing. Like, if FEDRA, the weird government agency, they're fascists, I'm sure they didn't, like, yeah, we're putting everyone in camps, but we're legalizing same-sex marriage. They definitely didn't do that. So, like, their act of getting married is, like, a defiant statement in that sense. And it's... And it's a culmination of the relationship. And then they get to choose their exit, I think, is the second most important thing, is that they aren't forced by, you know, some crazed straight person with a gun. They aren't, one doesn't have to sacrifice himself to save the other. There isn't, you know, some awful thing that has to happen. This is their choice. And they make it together in a loving way after having a long, fulfilling life. And to me, that's the difference. There's a difference between killing gay characters for shock value and allowing characters to have an arc to their story that ends with the final ending that is death, which is what happens in this case. And it's treated very respectfully. We don't, you know, like, Bill leaves a letter for Joel that basically says, don't go in the room. I don't want you to see our bodies. And Joel respects that. And, like, there is no shock value scene where we see their, like, desiccated bodies in a bed together holding each other. There's no voyeurism to it. And that to me is what makes this a respectful example of how you can have queer characters and they can die and that's okay, but this is how you do it. Does that make sense? I feel like I rambled.
It makes all the sense. I completely agree with you. That does feel like exactly what they were going for. And Neil Druckmann, who wrote the game and wrote the show.
Although he did not write this episode.
That's the thing, right? I was going to say, I feel like he knew that they couldn't do anything similar to what they had in the game.
Yeah.
And they changed the atmosphere of the town completely. Bill's town in the game, it is a video game, right? So it is very closed in with buildings. There are traps. It is a playground of a person who is extremely paranoid and good at survival. And with literal layers of walls built around the center.
Okay.
Right, so as we go through this town, it doesn't look anything like what it looks like in the show. It looks cold, it looks dilapidated, it looks like a town where no one would think twice that a person was living in this setting, in this scenario. Whereas in the game, it is lovingly protected. That's the only way I can describe it. It is lovingly protected. And that's such a shift, and it's so wonderful. I really like that they reframed the context of Bill. I also feel like people who play the game after watching the show are going to be like, what? What? This is what it's like in the game? That's what Bill is? Because in the game, he is a jaded fella.
Do you think people are going to be disappointed by that? Like,
by Bill? I think so.
Yeah.
Because in the game, it's a... First of all, we don't really meet Frank ever.
Right, because he's dead in the game.
Yes, but I also mean in the sense of, what Frank is like in personality. Because there are quite a few characters that we meet in the game through notes and journal entries and, little hints in the environment. And it does build stories. There's a character, Ish, and he probably has one of the most intricate and long stories in the game. And it's all through lore and notes and where we are physically in the game. And it's wonderfully done. But in the game, we get a note or two from Frank. It is vindictive. And we have Bill talk about him in a way that okay, here's the thing. I didn't pick up on anything between Tess and Joel in the game. But quite a few people that I've talked to did. So I'm obtuse as heck. And I did pick up on Bill and Frank when I played the game. So it's there, but it's very gritty and it's very cold and uncomfortable. And I would even say to a point, abusive. It's a very toxic relationship.
Okay.
And then here we have less of Bill taking the lead and being controlling, and more of Bill reframing the way he is as a person to fit the situation. He doesn't change. He is just as paranoid and just as cautious and just as, easy to set off. But as he tells Joel, he's doing it to protect the person he loves, right? And that's how he understands Joel. Which is also so touching, because Joel doesn't see himself as that. So, what are your thoughts on just the way that Bill was portrayed? Nick Offerman did a really good job.
Yeah, is it Offerman or Offerman? Oh, God.
Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson. Swan Ronson. I think he, it's a very non-conventional, gay man that he's playing in a lot of senses. He's not a stereotype at all. He's a survivalist. He's definitely got a very masculine streak to him. But there's these moments where he's so good at being this kind of macho guy while also portraying these moments of intense vulnerability, which is just super impressive to see.
He's a Southern doomsday prepper. And also a baby gay.
Yeah, exactly. Who's closeted as heck and at the beginning and very nervous. And it's an amazing contrast, I guess, that he's portrayed here. And he's done such a good job of just being so convincing too. Just like I was, I guess that's the way. But I was convinced by his performance that Bill was this real person to me, and that's why it's so deeply affecting that you can like imagine Bill as a real person and Frank as mm-hmm. real people. You know, like Frank reminded me of someone I know. In fact, I was like, wow, that really reminds me of so-and-so. Just even in the way he talked about things was like kind of amazing. But Bill, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what else to say other than Nick Offerman did an amazing job. I wish I could be more specific and be like a good mm-hmm. film critic and be like, oh yes, in this scene, the subtextual thing here was amazing and blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to do that. So I'm just going to say that Nick Offerman did a great job.
I also just, I really like their little, like, power differential. Bill might be the one with the guns.
Yeah.
But Frank said a sentence, he said a word, and Bill was done for.
Yeah.
That's so funny. And I like the details of Bill not being visibly emotional or warm or anything like that at first.
Yeah.
But all of the actions that he does show so much care, so much care. Like when he cooks the food for himself before Frank, right? There's a lot of care in it.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. He serves mm-hmm. it on a nice plate and he presents it artfully just for himself.
Yes. And the house might be full of dust and like, you know, a little bit forgotten about because he's all about his basement arsenal place. But it's neat. It is well lit. He set up all these things to make sure that he's able to live peacefully, safely, and like in luxury, honestly.
Yeah.
He's probably living in the most luxury in like half of the country. Like he's probably the most comfortable person.
Yeah.
And like there's that aspect. And then we get the little hints. For example, at the end, I think either right before they reach the final scene where they eat their final meal, which is a replica of the first meal they have.
Yes. On the same plates, too.
On the same plates with the same wine. And it's like, Bill did that.
Yeah.
Because Frank asked for toast, jokingly. The camera actually, like, zooms on the hole that Frank fell into 17 years ago, and it's still there uncovered.
Yeah.
Like, Bill is so sentimental. There's no other way to put it. The guy is all about showing his love, and he does in everything. It's maybe the set dressing or whatever, but, like, I don't know. I felt like Frank was probably the one that loved Bill less. I feel like Bill was all in. And not to say Frank didn't love him.
Yeah.
Because Frank very clearly loves differently.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank's love was more of like a love that we can recognize, whereas Bill's is a love that we have to look for. And I think that effort that we have to put into it, even though it's there on the screen and like we're putting the puzzle pieces together, like that was really fun to see as well.
Yeah. It's a very beautiful relationship. And I want to point out that it's very real that, like, the love manifests differently for Bill and Frank. Again, I think that's a very real phenomenon that they've portrayed here that you don't always see. I don't know. Like, I just think about this episode and about how easy it would have been to make this. There's the easy route they could have taken, which is to just do what was in the game. Or they could have done something where Bill and Frank are both alive, but just make them, like, squabble like an old married couple and then...
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's so many different routes they could have taken this that were just like very easy and shallow. And they decided to go the most difficult route possible. And it paid off. Like they show these characters with such depth and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, my cats are trying to kill each other. So I'm kind of distracted. I don't know
Justice,
what's going on.
Benny, your mom is working.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the thing. But Benny, what? Okay. Anyway,
I also feel like we definitely should talk about the relationship between Ellie and Joel as
Yes. So that was going to be my next question mm-hmm. for you, which was that, first off, what do you think of Pedro Pascal as Joel and Bella Ramsey as Ellie?
Well, Bella Ramsey is doing an amazing job.
Despite what the trolls say.
trolls always say whatever they want, whatever. I fully am invested in Ellie in this show. Like, she is Ellie. Whenever she does something, like when she played with the clock and the hand fell off.
Yep.
That is an Ellie move. Because in the game, when we're in the room for a long time, right? And it's like a room where you have to interact with things and you can't really leave the area until you do.
Yep.
Ellie is walking around, touching things, looking through boxes, just like being a kid. And we have so many scenes in this show where she does that, where she walks around and just like snoops. Or, you know, the scene in the hotel?
Yeah.
When she does the whole like receptionist, hello, I would like a room, please.
Yes.
Like, that was in the game too.
It was.
It was. It was in a different place than what it is in the show, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
All these little things that she does, I know they're written into it, but the way she does them, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Like, unironically excellent. And it doesn't feel forced, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like they're making a joke out of all these little things in the game. It feels very natural.
Yeah.
Like, you sounded a little surprised that I said that hotel scene was in the game.
I don't know, like, in retrospect, it does feel something that, like, would happen in a game, I guess, is, like...
Like a little interaction
atmospheric in the dialogue or something, but it just felt very authentic.
She does an excellent job. With Pascal, like, Joel is not a difficult character to play.
Yeah.
But he's doing a really good job. He looks sad in all the appropriate moments in a very, like, sad, tough guy way. And he does a lot of things where, I don't know if you notice it, but from time to time he looks at his watch when Ellie does something adorable.
Yeah.
And, like, he does little things like that. Not really.
Okay.
But the watch is a big part of it in the sense of, like, in the beginning it's such an integral part of the story that as the game keeps going, like, we just keep it in mind. It's not really, like, it's not a plot point or anything, but... We're just aware of it, because from time to time, he, like, in cutscenes, I might be misremembering, but I feel like he, like, touches the watch pretty often.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just remembering all the little times he did it and, like, compounding it into one big thing, but that's what it felt like to me. It felt like a big part of it. And in the show, he kind of does that from time to time. But also, I just want to say that I feel like we're going to be doing another episode of this pretty soon.
Yeah.
Because, just to go back to the second one... When they're walking on the bridge, remember Tess is asking Ellie about, like, just questioning her, making conversation.
Yep.
And she says, is, like, a boyfriend gonna come after you or something?
And Ellie hesitates.
Ellie doesn't answer.
But she has a look on her face. There's something, like, about it. I was like, oh, yeah, she's gay.
Yes. And, like, they are setting it up. And I'm very excited. I also am dreading that episode.
Why?
It's a sad game.
Okay.
I'm honestly dreading every episode.
Yeah.
Because as a person who, like, I love this game. It is my favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
And I'm including part two in it because I feel like it's one thing.
Yeah.
It honestly, like, personally, it came at a big moment of my life, the second one. But, like, overall... The first game left such an immense impression on me.
Do you like the second game?
I love it.
Okay.
It is also the most difficult game I've ever played and probably will play. Not in the sense of mechanics, like whatever, but emotionally, I'm telling you, I've went through all 16 stages of grief.
Like 16?
All of them. Extra ones. They were popping out of places that I was like, ooh, didn't know I can feel that playing a game. It's noticeable is the thing in the show that, first of all, of course, she's hiding a lot of things. Like, yeah, it's clear that Ellie is not telling them everything. But it never feels like she's keeping big things away. It always feels like she's only keeping the personal things hidden. Because I remember when they ask her about, like, where she's going, and she says that whole line of, like, Marlene asked me not to tell anyone, and here I am telling the first person who asks me.
Yeah.
She does reveal information that needs to be revealed, but she never talks about herself. And I cannot wait. I cannot wait for those episodes because, first of all, I'm really interested in the story of Ellie because I don't know where she came from. I just know that Marlene is someone who knew her mom. And I know a little bit about her past. I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Because I want you to just, like, experience it. And I don't remember what I said in the episode that we recorded before, because I don't know what I said in the beginning of this
one either. I barely remember, so.
Exactly. So, like, I want you to experience that. But afterwards, you will not get me to shut up. It's just, every Last of Us episode, I feel, is going to be just me talking, and I'm sorry for that.
It's fine.
I'm going to try to, like, pull you into it. But
okay. Okay, let's...
I get carried away.
Yes. Yes. Let's go back to episode 3, which is the topic of conversation. There was one moment I wanted to talk about, because I feel like it was even among people who really liked the episode, which, of course, because this character had gays in it, like, people were very controversial online. Like, some people were like, oh, you know, like, why did they interrupt the story of Joel and Ellie to talk about these two gay men who are only in their story for a brief moment of the game, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, whatever, you know, no one cares. Mm-hmm. But like something that I saw from like people who enjoyed the episode was that there was some moments that they felt were a little weak. Like there's the moment where Joel warns Bill that like raiders, you know, looters will come. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the next scene is that, and Bill gets shot, and you think he's going to die, and then all of a sudden, it's like 3 years later, and he's fine. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that. Like, do you think that, I don't know, like, part of me thought, like, this feels like there was maybe a follow-up on this that was cut, but then I read somewhere online, someone said, like, no, the game actually had some scenes like that where, like, something bad would happen, and then you would just cut to the future, and that character is fine.
Well, maybe the second game had it. The first one didn't have any, like, time
jumps.
Isn't
there a part where Joel is shot and you can cut the... And then it cuts to the next season. Like, there's this thing with the rabbit and then Joel's fine.
He's not fine.
Oh, okay. But he's...
In the game, he is not fine. That's why we play as Ellie. He's alive. He's very hurt.
Okay. So this was a little different from that then.
Yeah. I guess now that you say it, that is a little weak. While I was watching it, I honestly didn't care.
Yeah.
It was entertaining and fun. And we got to see, for me personally, it felt like they put a little bit of video game Bill into this scene.
Yeah.
Where he's just like out there in the rain, like shooting his gun, like, ha ha, you know, Rambo.
Yeah.
And then Frank comes out and pulls him back. And I just thought that was, like, an interesting little scene of, like, no, Frank is keeping him tethered to whatever. But that's, like, a poetic reading of the scene. Like, I don't know. It was fine.
I do think there's the kind of the fake out where, like, you then see, you know, in the future, or, like, the present, I guess, Frank is in the wheelchair. But, like, they kind of,
it's far away.
It's far away. And you think, oh, no, like, he got shot and now he's in a wheelchair. But actually, it's, like, a fake out and it's Frank, not Bill. I do think, okay, it did feel like a scene where, like, maybe there was a little more to it that got cut for time. Because, like, I don't know, there's something very perfunctory about Bill being like, oh, the fence will take care of the rest. Like, then why were you out there shooting at them? You could have just let the fence handle it, Bill. But I see what you're saying about, like, it was Bill giving into, like, his survivalism. And then Frank, I do like that idea that Frank, like, comes and, like, pulls him back down to earth. And I didn't think about that as, like, a metaphor before you pointed it out. So that's a really good point.
And, like, here's the thing. To me, it didn't... Like, it's not a scene that stands out. I honestly forgot about it.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, a little instantaneous thought in the moment. But it is kind of a weak scene.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't hurt my overall impression of the episode, obviously. I loved it, but, like, I was just thinking about that.
What did you think of the very awkward lunch between Bill and Joel, and then an amazing lunch at the same time happening between Frank and Tess?
I feel like it was perfect because, one, you know, Tess isn't in the show for very long, and I feel like getting more Tess time is important because it's kind of showing us the type of person Joel was, but by contrast. For the last, like, 20 years, since it, you know, like, Joel is so tight-lipped, we kind of have to see who he is by the impressions he has on other people. And so I think having more test time is important. I also just think Frank and Tess is like BFFs is really beautiful and fun. And the way that they were like coming up with the radio code and, you know, like you could totally tell that they were just like instant best friends. And then Joel and Bill have this conversation where they, it's like two guard dogs, like basically like sniffing each other's butts, like trying to figure out if the other one is a threat or not. But like, there's also this like respect element to it where like Joel gives Bill like some good advice and offers to help him, and Bill kind of acts like he doesn't need it, but I think we in the next scene we see that he took Joel's advice because Joel points out that Bill needs new
defenses and
like
such.
Something and new on the fence,
like the wire
on the fence. And in the next scene I think that if you look closely the wire's changed, so yeah.
And I feel like also in the present, we see the things that Joel was going to trade with him.
Yeah.
Like there when Joel gets there, when we get back to the story.
So Joel, I'm going to ask this question, is like a really bad guy. Like he's like a drug dealer and smuggler.
Yep.
And he doesn't.
He's not a great person.
He doesn't really seem to care what he smuggles, if he's willing to smuggle a child. So.
Yep.
He's not a good person.
No. And in the game, there's like not really a moment where they're like, he might be doing all of these things, but he's funny and kind. No.
No.
He's a bad person.
Okay. That's
and it keeps the theme kind of keeps into the second game. And like they don't forget that element of it. But also, he's a bad person in a world of terrible people.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten to it necessarily, I don't think. But, like, we're going to get to that part, and we're going to be like, oh, okay, he might be a bad person, but he's not, like, a viciously bad person.
Okay. Is kind of one of the themes of the game that, like, bad people can be good in certain contexts?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's very centered on Joel, very specifically, and we have a lot of people around Joel experiencing either de-evolution into a monster or experiencing a revitalization of hope.
Okay.
And it's like these two things that are fairly consistent in the game. The hope more so than the other one. But we get complicated characters. Marlene is one.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to another one I'm thinking of that is like on the opposite spectrum yet, so I'm not going to talk about that character.
Okay.
But there is a lot of that of Joel was an excellent father, then he lost his child, then 20 years passed, and he devolved into something that is not recognizable. He's not going to change, but he is going to change the way that Bill did, right? We can see it happening already. It's that, like, willingness to answer Ellie's questions or to clam up. Like, we get that push and pull in this episode as well, where he does answer a lot of Ellie's questions in the beginning. And then in the end, he, like, clams up.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's not like a very, it's not like a very smooth trajectory of Joel opening up to this kid that's traveling with him. It's very much like he lowers his guard a little bit and then, oh, can't do that. I'm gonna go back to being a really mean person to travel with.
Yeah.
And being grumpy. So I really like that. I had a question for you and I forgot. Oh, the introduction.
Yeah.
The very, very first scene. Was that in this episode or the second one where they show how it's kind of started?
That was in the second one with the second Indonesia, the mycologist.
What did you think of that as obviously an expert on everything medical?
So the long and short of the answer is that cordyceps do not infect humans, as people kept saying. Like that's the epidemiological take right there. I mean, it's portrayed fairly realistically in the sense that, like, it starts in a developing country, which is often where diseases start because, poor standards of hygiene practices, you know, more denser populations, and poorer enforcement of public health practices and standards. And we learned that, like, it spread through the bread, I guess, because Joel mentions pancake batter, which mm-hmm. was something that his daughter said she was going to make pancakes for him and then didn't.
And then she was going to eat cookies with the neighbor.
Right. And then she was going to, and then he was going to get a cake or something and didn't. So it's just like, there are all these near misses with bread. And we learned that.
I forgot about the cake.
And then we learned in Jakarta that there was like, that it, the first bite or the first like detected bite was at like a flour factory, a flour mill. And I think it's fairly realistic in the sense that like, if there were a disease that could spread this way, I'm just not sure. I don't know. I guess some spores of some fungi are like heat resistant, or in fact even activate when exposed to heat, which would then be like if you baked it. So I guess,
which is what happened in
the biters, the
girl with all the gifts,
whatever it's called. What did they call the zombies? Hungries.
Hungries. Yuck, yeah.
I hate it.
Is it hungries? Probably.
Why don't you just call them the peckish? Anyway. It makes sense.
What are your vibes of that scene?
Vibes?
The vibes.
Okay, so the mycologist, first of all, like, it seems a stretch to me that they would just go randomly find this random professor of mycology and, like, I don't know, have her suit up and go in there. But, like, the part where she's, like, bomb the city, I mean... Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole scene is very tense. I loved it. I love the fact that, like, okay, so just to point out that, like, I did really love that, like, I don't know, it kind of presented what I think, like, if you had, like, a public health expert come in with this random disease and be like, it's spreading and we don't know what to do, I think the person would just be like, yeah, you're screwed, you know, like, because, like, honestly, you don't really know, like, aside from quarantine, with a new disease, we don't really have a lot of tools to fight it at the start, especially if it's a fungal disease, because, you know, a lot of modern medicine is focused on bacteria and viral diseases. Like, we do have antifungals. Those do exist because there are a few fungal diseases, but like athlete's foot. But it'd be tough. Like, it'd be if we had like some kind of fungal disease that was spreading like that, I think we would be pretty screwed. So I love that scene. I like the fact that, like, I'm trying to think how to put this, that, like, it's showing that, like, no, there are scientific experts that aren't just white dudes in developed countries, which is, like, I feel like typically what you see in like a show, like, it even started like that, right? Like, the first scene of the show is the two, like, 1960s, like, doctors. I think they're supposed to be epidemiologists, but epidemiology didn't really exist in its modern form back then. But they're sitting there on, like,
they're the probably, like, show. Dentists, because doctors did whatever they wanted.
Yeah, they're sitting there on the talk show. I forget if they're smoking. I hope they were smoking, because that would just be peak irony. But
it feels like they probably
were. It feels like they should have been if they weren't. But then they're talking about, like, yeah, what if a fungus, you know, mutates and infects humans? I don't know. Like, that whole was, like, very classic. But I like that this scene was like, no, you know, this older person of color can be a professor and an expert too. And that's important to see that kind of representation. I don't know. I love that whole scene. It was very tense. I like that, you know, the verdict of it was basically like, yeah, we got to bomb everything because I don't even know how else to do it, because it felt like, if she had just been like, okay, here's how we're going to confront this, here's the 10-point plan, that would have been unrealistic. But the fact that she's just like, bomb it, that was, to me, very realistic.
I really like that scene, because there's like the tension of like, we're so used to seeing this sort of scene force a person who gets like taken by some sort of like occupational force, whether it be police, the military, whatever it is, right? And they're like forced into the situation.
Yeah.
And here they're just like, no, dude, you gotta follow us, please. And there was something also about that shift where she wasn't in danger from them as she first feared. And then, like, kind of the flip of power of like, oh, they actually really do need my expertise and they are begging for it. And I don't know, it was just very refreshing too. Because usually we get like scientists kidnapped from their families in the middle of the night and then placed in a bunker. And while they're looking at that, their families killed, and we get I Am Legend or something. You know what I mean? Like, most scenes that I've seen in movies happening like this were not structured like this.
Yeah. And
I don't know. Something about it is just, like, very refreshing, which I feel like the game also did an excellent job of. Like, it was something that I haven't experienced before in such a way when I played it. And the same with the second one, actually, but it's a completely different tonal shift. And, like, it's just really fun. I really like it.
So are there any scenes like that scene in the game or like video logs or audio logs that you find or something?
Nope. I'm gonna, let me Google it. I'm gonna show you like basically the only hint we get at anything.
Okay.
Basically in the game, the only thing we have is there's like, I think it's a newspaper that is in Joel's house that says something like, crops make people sick. And it's just a newspaper. I think it's like in his bathroom or something. And as we play as Sarah, we walk around. We can find it. We can miss it. And basically, it just has the date.
Yeah.
And it says, oh, something is weird with like a bag of crops. And that's what we get. And that's it.
Interesting. So I had read online that like, the flower theory had been like a game theory for a long time, and the show like confirmed it. So that is interesting.
Okay, okay, I found it. I found it. Copy image. Maybe we'll post this as well if we're so inclined to.
We'll do a dramatic reading of it. it's a newspaper. You gotta do like the newspaper voice. Texas Herald: admittance spikes at area hospitals.
The Shiro Shinobi.
300% increase due to mysterious infection. FDA expands list of contaminated crops. Massive recalls anticipated.
And then the next one is policewoman. Policewoman killed husband and three others.
Do like, the voice.
Oh, sorry. I can't. Okay.
You just have to like nasal it up and then, I don't know, get all 1920s on it.
I have to pretend I am talking about what happens in Republic City and Avatar.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. So like that is what we have.
Yes.
And that is the source of all theories. I do not recall anything else. Everything afterwards just seems like we get any newspaper, any kind of document from the past.
Yeah.
Seems to be about how the government and military responded to it, but we don't get a source.
So what? Hold on. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I need to throw this out there. Why does the game take place in 2013 or like start in 2013, but the show starts in 2003, do you think?
So that they can have the present be in the year we're in right now, I feel like.
But couldn't they do the same thing and just say 10 years, 20 years? Why does that make a difference?
If it was like 10 years, it wouldn't make sense for Ellie's story, I don't think.
Oh, because she
is a child of the apocalypse.
Wait, so does the game take place in 2027?
13 plus 20 years is 33.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So it's in the future.
It's in the future. Future game.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It could have made sense a little bit, but it would have been a little more forced because the world wouldn't have had two decades to become what it is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, 10 years is not a lot. Really weirdly, I'm starting to conceptualize that idea that, like, 10 years, a lot of things in my life happened 10 years ago, and more things are happening 10 years ago, and it's like, not that long.
Yeah.
After that existential crisis.
Yeah,
moment.
Make us feel like we're growing old. That will get us listeners.
I'm excited that you got us to talk about this.
I know it's like a little premature because usually we talk about the entire first season, but I felt like talking about this was important given the context of the discussion about Barrier Gaze, and this one is such a contrast to it, the third episode in particular, and then especially because it comes on the backs of a straight character, like Tess dying, who ostensibly was in a relationship with Joel, it's implied they were sharing they were sharing an apartment. I assume they were,
and a bed.
And a bed. I assume they were in a relationship together. So it was very interesting to me that we had like barrier straits right before that. And then after we get this like loving gay romance, I thought we needed to talk about that sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably
And it was very appropriate.
Yeah, and we'll probably
We'll find something else where a gay dies. Don't worry, guys.
There's plenty. We've got a whole list. But we'll probably do an episode about the whole season once it's done, too, because why not?
Yeah.
So look forward to that.
We definitely will. Mid-March. I can make an entire podcast about this game.
Oh, God, I could not be on that podcast.
No. You would have to play all of them and obsess with them. Well, they're bringing
the first one to PC, which I think will actually be like the thing that allows me to, because the problem I have is aiming using a controller is just so unintuitive to me. And I can never get past like the first few scenes, even on easy mode, because I can't hit anything with the gun.
Which is what happens in the show as well, which I loved. They kept missing, and it's like, yep.
They even make a joke about it. Like, Joel is like, people miss sometimes. It happens. I think the implication is that he and his brother were shooting at each other, was the impression I got, but maybe I was reading too much.
I don't think so. I feel like, I think that's from the first scene. Didn't he get hit in the face with a bullet when Sarah died? Oh, it was about Sarah.
Okay, I thought it was something about Tommy, maybe. But okay. Any final thoughts, Val?
So many final thoughts. Okay. So very little time. We don't have another 3 hours.
Yeah.
Chloe, what are your final thoughts?
Oh, turn it back on me. I see how it is. My final thoughts, it's a good show. The game's coming out on PC, so if like it being PlayStation only was like a reservation for you, now you can play the game. The show is really great too, and I think it's elevating like a video game adaptation as a TV show. So
absolutely,
yeah, definitely. Okay, so I just wanted to plug our socials. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our Tumblr is
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
Our website is inmedialez.com, and you can reach us at inmedialez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who rates, likes, subscribes, emails us, likes us on Twitter, interacts with us in any way so that we know that we're real and not a figment of our own imagination. That got very existential.
And we'll see you in the next one.
Bye and God. Oh, no, wait. That's not what I say. I don't say bye. What the fudge?
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Auf Wiedersehen. And God bless you.